episode 34. Happy New Year. Hope you guys had an awesome holiday season, whatever you celebrate, and that you had a great New Year as well. We took a little bit of a break because obviously a lot of us, well, I went back home to family. I think, Caitlin, you live either with your family or I can't remember. You do live with someone,
right? I live with my mother right
yes.
now, yes.
There we go. So Caitlin didn't have to go very far to see her mom.
No.
Which is all good. It's fine. I was just thinking because I had to drive like technically to another country, which when you stop and think about it is ridiculous. But yeah, we're back where this is going to be a Supergirl heavy episode because obviously we will go over the mid-season finale and the premiere that just happened this week. And we'll just do it as one big recap and obviously just go over all of the news that we got while we were off. But this episode, instead of a brief history and comic corner, we're going to do a little year in review sort of thing as well instead of that. And then that'll be back on our next episode. But let's kick things off with some TV news, I guess. So we'll start with Agent Carter because that's coming up soon.
Yay!
Yahoo!
So exciting. Oh, wait, no. I should probably give all of the contact information. See, this is what happens when you have a break. Oh, well. But guys, yeah, if you want to respond to anything that we go over in this episode, you probably know where we are by now. So it's at Hero Hype Podcast on Twitter, this post when it goes up on Hyperball.com, or our email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. But for real this time, Agent Carter news. So we are getting Angie in Agent Carter. They have finally confirmed that Lindsay Fonseca is back in Agent Carter season 2. But there's a twist. She's going to be appearing in a dream sequence. So
it's all a dream.
It's all a dream. Yeah. So according to the sort of release that they got through Entertainment Weekly, episode 8 is going to end on a cliffhanger where Peggy and Jarvis get into big trouble and are knocked out, and episode 9 is going to begin with a dream sequence that starts in black and white, which that's quite cool. So Angie is going to be like Peggy's conscience and is going to be speaking the things that Peggy maybe can't say to herself. So it ties things back together from the first season and it's connecting all of these things in a way that only a dream can do. So on the one hand, kind of sad that we're not getting Angie properly, but again, the dream sequence could be interesting, especially if they're putting it in black and white and they're playing with the sort of look of the episodes a little bit too.
Well, and also it would just start to get a little ridiculous if you're like, and then this character also goes to LA, and this character also goes to LA, and this character, like the entire cast, just picks up and goes to LA. That seems a little ridiculous. So realistically, it makes sense that she wouldn't be a big part of the season.
Yeah, that's true. We also got some really cool sort of character posters of everyone who's coming up in season 2. The one of Peggy is phenomenal. Like, her look is always so on point. But yeah, we get a really good look at everyone. I thought these character posters were really interesting. What did you think of them?
I love them, and Peggy should always wear red, because hot damn.
Yeah, she looks great in red. But, you know, we got our first looks at, like, all of the characters that we're getting. So we see, let's see, who do we have all here? So Sosa, got Jack Thompson, Dottie.
I like that Thompson is literally in shadows.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be telling for the season at all.
I mean, we know he's kind of shady, so we're getting a literal representation of that.
Kind of shady behind those blinds or shades.
But I'm Ching.
Yeah, but they all just look really, really cool. So obviously, Agent Carter got delayed till a little bit later this month. but it's really, really not that far away now, so time to start getting excited.
Ooh, I cannot wait for more Agent Carter.
Same. We also got some Daredevil Season 2 stuff. So, we got a little teaser video kind of thing today, which also gives us the release date of Daredevil Season 2. So, it's going to debut on Netflix on March 18th. So, that's a month earlier, pretty much, than we got it last year. So, it's not going to have even been a full year since we last saw Daredevil.
I'm like, cue that. It's happening, GIF.
Yeah. So the little teaser we got doesn't have any footage from the upcoming season, much like it did with a lot of its other teasers for the Netflix shows. It's very artistic-y, graphic design looking. This one is kind of like loads of really beautifully painted images that kind of are inside a church that all form together to make a big image at the end. And they all look really, really cool. And it kind of highlights on little bits from the previous season and shows like little glimpses at what had be coming, including Punisher.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah. But we also got a lot of Punisher in some, again, Entertainment Weekly images. So we got our first look at Elektra. We got a really good look at Frank Castle. We got a really adorable, absolutely adorable picture of Matt and Karen playing pool.
So cute.
It was the cutest picture. I absolutely am in love with it. But yeah, not long until we get Daredevil Season 2 either, so it's all happening this year. I think this is the year of the superhero. There's so much happening this year.
Because last year wasn't the year of the superhero.
I mean, on TV, there was a lot of TV stuff, but I think we've got at least a strong standing in movies as well, whereas last year, I don't think, personally, the movie side of the superhero stuff was particularly strong. But I guess we can come to that in our year in review a little bit. So, that's pretty much it for Marvel news.
But we have a lot of DC. So, after the winter finale, we can just talk about this real fast, of Supergirl. There was an interview with Andrew Kreisberg kind of talking about what was coming in the second half of the season. And we've already started the second half, so we'll just hit a couple of high points. He talks about how episode 10, which will air in 2 weeks, is about Wynn and his father, Toyman. So he's talking about it being a really good episode for Jeremy Jordan, which hopefully will be exciting because Wynn is not my favorite character right now. So we'll see how that is. But he kind of says that somebody who's dealing with that shame, humiliation, regret, and emotion, Wynn's been presented as a pretty happy-go-lucky, nice and sweet guy, but he came from a very dark place. It's Jeremy's best episode. He does such amazing work in it. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. We know that his father, Toyman, is going to be played by Henry Cherney, so it's coming.
Yeah.
Get a Wynn episode.
I'm looking forward to seeing another side to Wynn, because like you, I'm not completely sold on him as a character. He does rub me up the wrong way a lot of times. I didn't mind him so much in the episode that aired this Monday, but
me neither.
Yeah,
I liked him a lot in this one.
I liked him a lot in this episode, and I'm hoping that they'll make me eat my words and my hat and whatever else, and they will actually put him on a turning point from this episode on, because I really liked the win that we got in the episode on Monday a lot.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Just a couple other things. We talked about Maxwell Lord, who we saw is even more shady than perhaps we even thought in the premiere. But basically saying that he really believes he's out to protect the human race, and that he's kind of doing what he does because he thinks that humans are getting the short end of the stick with all the aliens and all that stuff running around. So he's complex, but he thinks he's doing the right thing, which we'll also talk about when we talk about what he is actually up to in those secret labs.
Naughty, naughty man.
But my favorite part of this interview was kind of talking about John Jones, who we know is the real identity of Hank Henshaw, and how he is going to have kind of a fatherly relationship with Alex and Kara. And they're saying a big part of his journey this season is to learn to embrace who he is just as much as Kara has. And though he's going to be having kind of a reciprocal relationship with Kara, he's saying, ironically, although he's obviously older and a father figure and is able to be a teacher and guide to Kara, as far as being a superhero is concerned, it's Kara who is able to teach him that even if you're from Mars, that doesn't mean you can't be human. That is their emotional journey for the season. And that Jean is going to be willing to make some amazing sacrifices for Alex and Kara, and that they'll do the same. So I'm, now that Kara knows who he is, I'm super excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, same. I still don't think I'm over the fact that we've got Martian Manhunter in Supergirl. I think I'm still coming to terms with the fact that that is a thing that happened, and we've got Martian Manhunter, because it's such a great character to have. He's definitely like one of my favorites, so I'm just so excited about where they're going with this.
And there's been kind of a shift in the way David Harewood has played the character, obviously, now that we know who he really is. And he's just much more pleasant.
And yeah.
I'm so happy about it. And when Kara finds out the truth and he's like, you could have told me, I can keep a secret. And they're both like, no, you can't. Like, it's the best thing ever. So I'm just enjoying him on the screen so much more now that we've got this reveal, and I cannot wait to see the way, you know, his relationship evolves with those two.
Yeah, agreed.
It's been really great in the little bits we've had so far, so super excited for that. But we will talk more about Supergirl in a couple of minutes after we zip through a whole bunch more DC news. But so Arrowverse, in awesome news, Vixen is coming to live action. So there was some question when she got the animated series if she would transition into live action. And now she is. So Megalyn Echikunwoke will be reprising her role as Mari McCabe on Arrow. So she's going to appear in episode 15. And that's super excited. So they're not telling us a lot about what she's coming there for, but she'll be there in an episode, and that's super exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And even if it's just like a one-off cameo kind of thing, it's still really cool that they're connecting that little animated series directly with Arrow now and bringing her across into live action. Because obviously it was supposed to happen in the same universe anyway, it was just animated, but this is even more exciting.
Yes, so if we watch the series, did you ever watch the series?
I did go back. I did manage to eventually find a way to watch it, and it was so good. It was too short, though. Mm-hmm. That's my only complaint. It was way too short. And having come from an animation background, trust me, I get it. Short animated episodes are the best thing because you don't have to do as much ridiculous work, especially when it's sort of 2D. 2D is like the biggest bane in any animator's life for like anything. So, but I'm hoping maybe if it comes back, have we been told it's coming back? Are we getting like a second season of it?
We don't know. I think a lot of like there were questions when it came out about whether there'd be another season, whether she would go live action, and everyone was saying it kind of depended on how well it did. And so the fact that she has transitioned to live action at all seems to be an indication that it did well. So hopefully that means we'll see some more of the animated series, and maybe we'll get some longer than 4 to 5 minute episodes.
Please, please, even like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, something in that kind of ballpark, that would be really nice, because you can really flesh out the character a bit more and get some more interesting stuff in the actual episodes. But otherwise, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really nicely done, but I just wanted more.
Yes. But as you know from the series, she is based in Detroit, so it makes sense that she wouldn't be necessarily joining as a recurring character since she doesn't live in Star City. So, but it's nice that they'll be making that transition, at least for one episode, and maybe she'll be popping back in later as well. So, yay for that. In less than yay Arrow news,
when we started out, when you said awesome news, I thought you were being sarcastic to start with, because I thought this was the headline that you were going to go with. But no, it wasn't sarcasm. It was the actual other Arrow news that we
actual
had.
Actual awesome news.
Yeah.
So in less than awesome news, we found out that there's going to be a new Arrow comic all about everybody's favorite Malcolm Merlyn. Oh, okay. it's going to be called Arrow the Dark Archer, and John Barrowman and his sister Carol are writing it. So, because who else likes Malcolm Merlyn besides John Barrowman? So.
I have had a think on this overnight, and Caitlin messaged me with this news initially, and I was like, this is the stupidest thing that I've heard. This is the stupidest thing that I've, like, heard all day. I don't like it. I'm gonna go and listen to a stupid playlist that I found instead and pretend that I didn't hear it. But overnight, I've had a little think on it. And do you know the one positive I'm gonna take from this? Because it's gonna be exploring Malcolm's past.
More Tommy.
More Tommy. Exactly. Oh, you know me so well. Yeah.
Well, that's really positive I could think of, too.
Yeah. We're going to get more Tommy. We're probably going to see Tommy's mum. We're potentially, depending on what the time frame is in how it's happening, we may even see some more Tommy and Oliver antics and a little bit of Oliver pre the ship being exploded and sinking. So, and then everything happening to him on all of the different islands he was on. So, yeah, that's one thing I'm taking from it, is we may get little snippets of other characters that maybe we like more that are tangled up in Malcolm's story.
Yeah, so this is going to be set between Arrow's third and fourth seasons, but they're also going to have flashbacks, like, to how he met his wife and where his money comes from and all that stuff. So it's going to be 12 chapters released bi-weekly digitally first, and then they'll collect it all in a print edition, and it will start being released on January 13th. So if you actually like Malcolm Merlyn, unlike the rest of us, go check that out. And they have worked with all the Arrow producers, so it is fitting within the series canon. So nothing to worry about on that part.
Hashtag more Tommy.
Yeah. So that's about it for Arrow. On The Flash, we got news that we're going to see Robbie Amell again.
Ooh.
But not quite how you might want him. He is coming back in an upcoming episode, but he is going to be, as you'd probably expect, the Earth 2 version of Ronnie. And he is not going to be Firestorm. He's going to be Deathstorm. Dun, dun, dun.
Way to make it sound super ominous.
Well, with a name like Deathstorm.
He's like, going to be all... he's going to be all sunshine and rainbows and puppies and lollipops and skipping through meadows. What are you talking about? God. Don't judge someone.
Taken.
Yeah, don't judge someone on their name just because it's got death in it.
And Storm, and has a really evil comic book background. Shut up. We also found out that Eobard Thawne is coming back, and not as Tom Cavanagh, but Matt Letcher, who played the original version of Eobard Thawne in season one, right before he kills Harrison Wells, takes his form. But he's going to be back in episode 11, which is appropriately titled The Reverse Flash Returns. And it's a little confusing about how that's going to work. If he's the Earth 2 version of Eobard Thawne, why has Zoom not killed him yet? I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's going to pop up, and that's not going to be good for Barry.
No, no. Who are you going to be more afraid of now? Reverse Flash or Zoom? Because this is, like, this is true, awful, terrible, evil, like, Earth 2 kind of craziness.
So, that's kind of exciting. So, we also know that some stuff that's going on in the second half, like, we're going to see the Earth 2 version of Caitlin, who is Killer Frost. And we're going to see the Earth 2 version of Barry, who is a total nerd. Which we saw in a promo, and I am very excited about all of it.
Yeah.
So, I need the Flash to come back into my life.
We've got a little while until that, though, haven't we?
Comes back on the 19th.
Hmm. So, not too long.
No.
Actually, wait, is that the same day as Lucifer? That might be the same day as Lucifer. I know Lucifer's around that ballpark end of the month kind of area, so... Oh, so many shows.
Speaking of so many shows.
Yeah.
Another show that's premiering in the Arrowverse is Legends of Tomorrow, which I am so excited about. And so is the CW, because they are airing two half-hour specials, one about Legends of Tomorrow and one about Justice League. So they're going to air right after the mid-season premiere of The Flash on the 19th. Going to be DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Their Time Is Now at 9 o'clock, and DC Films presents Dawn of the Justice League at 9:30, and during the Justice League special, we're going to get a new Suicide Squad trailer. So we're going to find out about all the characters in Legends of Tomorrow. Most of them we've already met, but we haven't really done anything with Rip Hunter yet, so I imagine we'll find out more about him in that special. And they're going to interview Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, Andrew Kreisberg, Phil Klemmer, Wendy Miracle, all those producers across the many Arrowverse shows. And then the Dawn of the Justice League is going to look at a bunch of the upcoming DC films, like Batman v Superman and Wonder Woman, and have the Suicide Squad trailer. So I think it's kind of interesting that they're doing both a special about Legends, which... That not so surprising, because I think they're really banking on this to do well, but that they're doing one for the films, because DC has made such an effort to keep the films and the TV versus separate, to the point that certain characters like Deadshot had to be killed off in Arrow so they couldn't use them, and we are going to have two different Flashes, but we're going to do the special on the movies on the CW, so kind of interesting.
Yeah. But I guess because it is pretty much at this point the home of DC TV, so if they're going to air a short special, if they're going to air it anywhere, I guess that makes the most sense.
Sorry, Gotham.
Yeah, sorry, Gotham. God, I keep forgetting about Gotham. Terrible.
Well, it's the only DC property that's not on the CW right now.
Yeah.
Like, ABC is Marvel and the CW is DC, basically. But, so, set your DVRs for those specials. We'll see if they give us anything exciting and interesting. But with Legends coming so close, we have a whole bunch of stuff for that. So we have heard that Ra's al Ghul is going to be on Legends of Tomorrow, as is Damian Dark. So it seems likely that they're going to be on it together. Though we don't know. We know that Neil McDonough, who plays Damian Dark, did an episode he says it was in 1975. So that's obviously taking place in the past. And we know that Ra's al Ghul and Damian Dark were friends before the whole thing went south on them, because the current Ra's became Ra's, because we don't actually know his name before he became Ra's. So it's very confusing to be like, before Ra's became Ra's. But so we don't know, but I assume that those two appearances will be connected. That seems like it would make sense. But
yeah, it does.
It looks like the Legends will be going back and seeing Damian Dark, who is my fave. I love him so much. So as many shows as he wants to be on, I am totally here for it. Other casting news, we have a new love interest for Sarah. And it is a lady, so that is positive. And because we know Sarah is bi, so yay for ladies. So Allie Liebert will be playing Lindsay Carlisle, who is described as a soft-spoken, intelligent lady who is the ideal picture of 1950s womanhood. But she harbors a deep secret. She's a lesbian. Confused and scared, it seems she is doomed to suffer alone in a backwards time, until she falls for a girl from the future, Sarah Lance. So apparently this episode is kind of look at Sarah visiting 1958, and that's when she meets Lindsay, and they're going to kind of explore her emotional ties to people after her resurrection from the Lazarus Pit. So I'm excited about this. I just, my only concern is that the whole, her relationship with Nyssa is forgotten somehow. So even if they don't want to move forward with that at all, I hope we get a little closure on it. Because the last we saw, Nyssa was being dragged off to prison after Sarah had come back without a soul, but Sarah now has a soul, and Nyssa apparently doesn't know, and it's all very kind of messy.
Yeah, it is. That's the one thing I'm hoping as well, is that they don't forget where Sarah came from and the connections that she had previously when they start introducing new love interests for her. Even if this is like a one episode thing, but I just don't want them to forget Nyssa, because that was such an important relationship for both of them. And I just want, yeah, like you said, I just want some closure on that first before potentially she starts exploring other relationships. Obviously, it's going to be very difficult to do stuff with Nyssa and Sarah because Sarah's going to be traveling through time and all over the place, and Nyssa's being taken away. So, yeah, it's just closure. I think that's a good word for it. I just want closure on it.
So, we'll see. I mean, maybe we don't know what the plans for the future of Legends are, if it's going to be a completely different cast in season two, if it gets renewed, and then maybe Sarah will pop back onto Arrow and maybe they can move forward. I don't know. But at least some sort of acknowledgement of that relationship would be nice. We also today, in exciting casting news, learned that Jewel State will be guest starring on Legends. She's going to play Rachel Turner, who is a tech genius roboticist who exists in a future in which technology has an even firmer grip on our lives than it does today. And she's a descendant of a long line of inventors, one of whom turns out to be someone from the DC Universe. And her work is destined to fall in the hands of Vandal Savage, who's going to use it to take over the world. So she needs to team up with the team to stop him. So do we have any theories about who one of her descendants might be?
I do not have any theories yet. I was gonna start digging around and doing a little bit of research and figuring it out, but it's Jewel State. Whoever it is, I'm gonna love I'm gonna love her anyway. I have like such a weakness for Jewel State.
Yeah, so that's exciting. She'll probably, I imagine, just be in one episode, but it's exciting.
I know, I love her so much. So much. I'm so excited about this. But yeah, once I've had a bit of time to like dig through and figure things out and have a look, then I will give theories. Maybe on the next episode, I'll have like a theory in place for who she might be.
All right, something to look forward to. And then just a couple other Legends things. We got some character posters that look pretty great of the main cast all suited up and looking badass. Those looked pretty good, I thought. Do you like the character posters?
Oh, yeah.
In costume?
I think they look really, really cool. I love them. I think they are better than the jaunty angle poster. But again, I think, was it you that said it, that you were kind of like, they kind of needed to do it at a jaunty angle, because how else were they going to fit everyone on?
Exactly. There are a lot of them. But we also got a series of posters of the cast in civvies, and I really love these posters, though for some reason we're missing our Hawkman, so I'm not sure why, but we got kind of civvy clothes for everybody else, and they've got kind of this noir vibe, which I love, and Katie Lotz looks so good. I just love her.
Yeah, she looks amazing. But when I saw, like, Hawkman was missing, I was thinking in my head, like, Hawkward!
There's the episode title.
Oh, poor Hawkman, being left out of everything.
I thought that was strange, but he did not appear. But we got Rip Hunter, and Ray Palmer, and Sarah, and Kendra, and Leonard, and Mick, and Jack, and Martin Stein. So they all look pretty great. They're all in kind of dark colors and looking very serious, and I like them. I'm really just, I need the show in my life. It's going to be so ridiculous.
Soon.
And I'm so excited.
So soon.
Not soon enough. We've been looking forward to the show for almost a year.
Damn, we found out about it. Has it been that long since
they... found out about it last February.
Damn. It really has been that long.
And we were all like, why is there another spinoff? And now I'm like, I need the spinoff.
Yeah. And you think about it and it's like, no way. Actually, it has been a long time since they last launched like a proper spinoff, because they haven't necessarily billed Supergirl as an actual spinoff of like the rest of the shows. So...
yeah, that's pretty clearly standing on its own.
Yeah.
So the question is, what's the next spinoff?
Constantine? No.
You wish.
I know, that is incredibly wishful thinking there, but...
all right. So that's it for our TV news. So I think we can move into our discussion of the last two episodes of Supergirl, which was all pretty much just one big story. So we kind of have, on the one hand, we've got, where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the Kara and Astra stuff or the Catco stuff?
Let's go with the Astra stuff, because I really want to talk about Astra.
All right, so this kind of starts with Astra taunting Kara. She's still trying to get her to, join her side. And eventually calls her out while she's, like, hovering right over the city and is like, come at me, bro, basically. So Kara does, and they have a massive fight, and somehow Kara wins. And she brings Astra into the DEO, and they lock her up. But, oops, she actually wanted that to happen. So we'll find out more about that mission in a minute, but... the kind of, while she's being held captive, she's basically revealing to Kara that her mother maybe wasn't such a morally upright individual as Kara thought. So Kara is really kind of struggling with this idea that her mother might not be so great, because Astra reveals that Kara's mother used her to catch Astra. Basically, she had Kara contact her aunt. And when Astra came, because she cared about her, Allura arrested her. So, being a little sneaky. So, what were your thoughts here, Danya?
I thought this was a really interesting way to flesh out the character of Astra and even Allura as well. Like, I thought it was an interesting look at how your personal connections can't interfere sometimes with your... I guess your moral obligation to your planet of sorts. So I thought it was just really, really interesting to see another side to each of these characters. And I don't know where I stand with Astra, because after both of these episodes, I found myself really liking her, like actually liking her as a character, as opposed to liking her as a villain. So yeah, I thought it was a really interesting way to go with it and to kind of open up the show a little bit more and maybe start moving it in different directions. But I really, really liked what they were doing with Astra in both of these episodes.
Yeah, and it's really hard for Kara because she's held on to this image of her mother as being so pure and upright and powerful and all these wonderful things, and then this thought that maybe she isn't all of those things is really hard for her because she is on another planet. Like, her mother is dead, her planet is dead, and she has no way to go back to it, and having all she has of it is her memory. And for Astra to kind of at least initially start tarnishing that is really hard for her, and it's interesting to see how she kind of reacts. And we kind of eventually return to that issue of her temper, which I thought was really good that we saw Kara kind of struggling to deal with everything that all these revelations that she's dealing with, especially in the second episode, that she really snaps basically at one point because she just can't deal with it. And I think that's smart and consistent, and it works very well.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I thought it was really interesting to see how Kara reacted to this information. And yeah, I just think it was a nice way to change up the show. Because obviously it would be so easy to just have it be Kara versus Astra and have it be this very rigid kind of antagonistic relationship. But now it's something that much more complicated because within that relationship, there are now levels and layers that, well, actually, Astra does still really care for Kara and Kara still cares for Astra. And it just, it's not going to be as straightforward anymore. So I just thought it was a really cool way to switch it up and make it more complicated and far more interesting now that there's these shades of grey in amongst all of it. It's not a black and white good versus evil story, which I think was the right way to go.
Agreed. So the reason that Astra got herself captured was to kind of distract the DEO and Supergirl from the real mission, which was for Non and the other Fort Roz escapees to attack Lord Technologies. So this was kind of interesting because they were very clearly going after something. And we find out later probably what that was when we see what Maxwell is up to. But so they're attacking Lord Technologies. The DEO arrives, a whole bunch of people get killed. Kara arrives, has a fight, all that good stuff. So that was pretty cool. But I guess let's skip to what Maxwell is actually doing. So we follow him into this super secret lab, and we see a girl who looks a whole lot like Kara. Her skin is flaking and is scarred. She has brain trauma and no one to miss her, and looks like she is being experimented on somehow. And then at the very end, her eyes open and they are black. So this is our theory, of course, is that, well, maybe not of course, but that this is Maxwell essentially is creating Bizarro Girl. So we had it confirmed by Andrew Kreisberg that we would be seeing a Bizarro in the second half. And Bizarro's for the uninitiated. I wrote a little article about this, but the essential idea is that they are doppelgangers who are basically the complete opposite of their counterparts. So they have, like, a doppelganger of Supergirl is going to have the complete opposite powers as she does. They have their own planet that is Earth spelled backwards, and it is a cube. So there's that. And basically, they're kind of deformed, misshapen, gray skin, extremities are misshapen, don't quite fit their body. They speak in polar opposites of what they mean. So they're basically the complete opposite of their counterparts. So it seems like Maxwell's going to end up creating Bizarro Girl. In the New 52, Lex Luthor, who is the Maxwell Lord, seems to be in this series, tries to create a army of supermen by injecting a mixture of Superman's DNA and our human's DNA into a host. And that kind of creates an imperfect clone, which is a Bizarro. And that kind of seems to be what is going to happen. That seems to be the most likely version, because other versions of creation have been duplicator rays, which doesn't really seem the style for Supergirl. So it seems like we are going to get a really messed up version of Supergirl in Bizarro Girl with the setup.
Which, that'll be really cool to see how they treat that. Because obviously the way that you explain it, it can go to a place that maybe slightly too over the top, a little bit too cheesy, kind of ridiculous territory. So it'll be interesting to see how they treat it, if this is the direction that they're going in, and think it's pretty obvious that it is. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they play Maxwell's involvement, how that kind of pits him against the other characters, and then Bizarro Girl herself. But it now kind of makes sense why Maxwell was so obsessed with Supergirl. So, yeah.
Yeah, wanting to know what makes her tick because he's trying to make his own.
Basically, yeah.
What I find really interesting about going down the Bizarro route is that they've already set up kind of the issue of Kara having to face her mother's mirror image in Astra, and now they're setting up that she's going to have to face her own mirror image. So Maxwell seems to be doing this. He tells James Olsen that, you know, the media is glorifying this pretty blonde superhero without kind of acknowledging the threat she represents and the danger that comes from having an alien presiding over your city, basically. So I have to wonder if the way Astra has caused Kara to question a lot about Allura, if having her own doppelganger is going to make her question things about herself and her mission in National City.
Now, see, that is such a good outlook on it. I hadn't considered that. Oh, Caitlin! Oh, see, you've brought your thinking cap to this episode. God damn it. Oh, see, now I'm, like, really, really excited for the rest of the episodes and can't believe that we have to wait 2 weeks for the next one. What is wrong with you?
Sorry for being an English teacher.
Yeah. God damn you, English teachers.
This is what I do for a living.
Yeah.
But my other question with this was, this is likely what the Fort Ross escapees were going after. So how did they know, and how much do they know about what he's doing in his labs, do we think?
I don't know that they know exact specifics. I don't know that they know exactly what Maxwell is up to, just that maybe they've uncovered some stuff that make them suspect potentially what he could be doing, and therefore that's why they're going after him. But it depends what, like, the abilities are of some of the Fort Ross escapees, because we don't know the abilities of every single one of them yet, so they may know a hell of a lot more than we think they do.
Yeah, it's interesting that they are specifically attacking his lab, and then we find out he's creating this, what is going to turn out to be kind of a flawed clone, likely, of Supergirl. So I'm very curious about how much they know about what he's up to, which is clearly more than we as the audience know at this point. But other people who were suspicious of Maxwell Lord were James and Wynn in this episode. This was kind of wonderful to me because basically Wynn and James see that Kara has so much on her plate that they just pair up the two of them and work together to investigate what's going on at Lord Technologies. James goes and talks to Maxwell, and then when that doesn't go anywhere, Wynn helps James sneak into the lab with his hacking abilities. And I adored this because Wynn has been so confrontational and nasty about James up until this point. And in this one, they just work together really well. And at the end, when James comes back with the split lip, like, who's bringing him an ice pack? It's Wynn. So it seems like they're setting up a potential for a friendship between the two of them outside of Kara, which can only help to serve the team if it's going to be a long-term Scooby gang, essentially, of the three of them. And I really loved it.
Yeah, me too. I really like this new direction, particularly with Wynn's sort of attitude to James more than the other way around. I don't think James has, like, this preconceived problem with Wynn that Wynn had with James, so it was just nice to see it all set aside and them actually finding some common ground that isn't necessarily Kara, even though it's initially spurred on by wanting to, like, save Kara from having more on her plate kind of thing. So I just really liked it. I liked the team up. It made me really enjoy Wynn a lot more as a character, and I definitely want to see them teaming up a lot more because I think they worked really, really well together.
Yeah, their skills complemented each other, and it was good to see James off being intrepid, as Maxwell Lord calls him. And he's kind of continuing to do the Lois Lane role in needing help, basically, which is kind of refreshing, but I think he is really great. But also, he and Wynn are, like, talking over their communication and kind of snarking a little bit at each other. And I don't know, Wynn genuinely seems to care about what happens to him, especially once he gets knocked out and he was like, that's not okay. So I thought this was great, and I hope we see more of it.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it's a great direction for both of them and their relationship. So hopefully they'll continue that on and we won't see Wynn backsliding into the stuff that he was doing prior to this episode, because I think he's at his least interesting there. I think this was where he was at his most interesting. And yeah, hopefully with that upcoming episode with the sort of emphasis on Toyman and Wynn's past, we'll get a very interesting look at who he was, where he came from, and maybe a little bit more vulnerability in him that's slightly different from like what we know him as. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where this goes.
All right. So moving away from Maxwell Lord, the whole thing with Astra continues. When Hank is taken captive after the fight, Alex is acting director, but not for very long, because our favorite General Sam Lane arrives. He has an order from the president that he is going to be in charge of the hostage situation because they want someone who is not emotionally involved. So he comes in, takes charge, and in short order starts torturing Astra with kryptonite to get her to tell them where they're holding Hank, essentially. So just such a good human being.
Yeah, so great. Upstanding.
I hate him.
I don't think we're supposed to like him. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we're supposed to like him at the moment. Maybe he will have some redeeming qualities at one point, but at the moment, not so much.
See, I just keep seeing the parallel between him and Eiling on The Flash, and Eiling kind of gets a comeuppance with Grodd, so maybe Lane has some comeuppance coming his way. Yeah. We'll hope.
Yeah, we can hold out hope for that.
Yeah. But kind of during this, Kara is really hostile towards Astra, but Astra is kind of like, you just don't want to hear what I have to say, you don't want your mother's memory to be tarnished any more than it already is. And she's right. Basically, Kara doesn't want to hear it. But eventually she realizes she does need to hear it. And there's this really wonderful scene where Kara sits down next to the cage and Astra sitting on the other side. And Astra tells her the truth, that Allura sentenced her and Non to the rest of their lives on Fort Roz because they were killing people, and that's not okay. But Allura believed Astra that the planet was dying, and she's like, I will continue fighting this fight for you, but I'm not going to use your methods. So Astra basically says, you know, she never stopped believing in me, and I see that in you, Kara. And it's this really beautiful moment. This was probably my favorite scene in this episode.
Yeah, it was stunning. That moment was so, like, it was so well acted on both of their parts, and it just, the emotional gravity of it was huge. It was just such a great moment, and this show has a lot of these amazing moments between characters that they just get so right, and this one was one of them, because, you know, Kara doesn't want to hear necessarily what Astra has to say at the start. She understands how important it is and decides to hear it. But you think about Astra's like the only other remaining member of her family other than Superman. And for them to be at odds like this, and for her to have brought like initially stuff that Kara didn't want to hear about her own mother, like a truth. And for this moment, then for her to kind of turn it around and be like, you're so much like your mother and she never stopped believing in me. Like that obviously means so much to Kara as well because of the connection that she still has to her mother. It was just so beautiful. I loved this moment so much.
You can see that that's kind of where things really start shifting between Kara and Astra, and what causes Astra essentially to stop Non from double-crossing them during the prisoner exchange. Like, she still cares so much about her niece, and her niece reminds her of her sister, who she, it's almost like she's kind of acknowledging it to herself too. You know, she actually never stopped believing in me, because she has seemed so angry up until this point about Astra and everything Allura and everything she did. And then she becomes a lot softer about it here. So it's almost like she has kind of refused to acknowledge it to herself until this moment. And it kind of changes how she feels she needs to approach Kara, which is really interesting. And I'm really excited to see where they go with it.
Agreed. Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the most interesting things moving forward. Because, like I said earlier in the episode, it's not so black and white anymore. This is operating in huge shades of grey. And their relationship has changed as of this episode. And you can't see them as good versus evil anymore. You can't. That's not the way that it's going. And what that means for both of these characters, that's what's going to be really interesting now that the show is back and we're in the back half of this season.
Indeed. But someone who it is black and white for is Nan. They go to the prisoner exchange. This is after Astra has given a fake location and it was a trap and a lot of people died. But Kara's like, screw this. We're going to go through with the prisoner exchange. Astra says it'll be on the up and up, so we can do it. So they go and exchange prisoners. So they get Hank back and Nan gets Astra back. But then Nan's ready to double cross everybody. And then Astra is like, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to kill any more people today. And she says, this is not a truce. It's just for tonight. That's it. But Kara sees that as a promising start for something. So I thought that worked quite well. Astra's still kind of struggling with where she stands on this whole thing. But Nan is definitely not in the black and white area, or not in the gray area. He's all black and white at this point.
Yeah. Nan is probably going to be the driving force of the antagonistic side. And we may see more wavering on Astra's part, which will be an interesting test of Nan and Astra's relationship as well. So that'll be interesting to see where they go with that too.
Yeah. Plus Astra outranks Nan, but oh, it's all interesting. It's so interesting.
I love this show.
I love this silly little show.
It's wonderful. It's like captured my heart probably about as much as The Flash did when The Flash started, because it's just doing so much that's different and they're having fun with it. And you can tell that everyone is having so much fun with this show. And I think that helps you love it that much more.
One other thing I love from this is that when the whole double cross is going on, Alex is going to Hank, you need to transform, and Kara, you know, has super hearing, so hears it. So she asks about it, and so they tell her the truth. So now Kara knows that Hank is Jean, and they have the best moment where he's like, you could have told me, I can keep a secret. They both go, no, you can't. You just see such a big difference in, like, Hank Henshaw, like when he's Jean versus when he is Hank. And so he goes from like all stern to like sarcastic and softer. And I just, I'm so glad Kara knows. I'm glad that secret didn't go on very long.
Yeah, same. I'm glad as well, because they can have more fun with it now. Now that that secret is out and they're both aware of it, like they can do some really cool stuff with it. And obviously, they do something really interesting with it in the episode that was on Monday. But yeah, there's just so much. It opens so many more doors for what the show can do when they're both in the know, rather than this kind of underlying secret that Alex is keeping from Kara, which would have caused some unneeded tension between the two of them. Because the thing when you're hiding a secret from someone, people always know that you're hiding something from them. They just don't know what, and they're always going to come up with the worst possible scenario in their heads. So I don't think it wasn't a conflict that was needed in the show. So I'm glad that the secret is out there and Alex doesn't have to hide stuff from Kara.
Yeah, I feel like the more superhero shows this group does, the more they realize that that's, like, the least interesting story you can do in a superhero story. So they just get it out of the way faster and faster on their shows, which I think is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it seemed like they were going in that direction with Kat. And then they reeled that back in, which is kind of disappointing. But we'll get there in a second. The other plot line in the mid-season finale was that Kat's emails are hacked. So Kara, James, and Wynn are assigned to go through them to look for anything potentially embarrassing. And they find some really amazing stuff. Like, you know, things she calls Lois Lane. And Kat's like, please, I call that to her face. And, you know, her personal shoppers and all this, and that she tried to go on Undercover Boss because Anderson Cooper dared her. They have these great things that they find in her emails. But then they find a payment to someone named Adam Foster, who they kind of assume she's having an affair with. But actually, that is her son. She had him by someone she met before Carter's father. And she tried to get custody and just eventually decided to withdraw the suit because she thought maybe her son would be better off without her. And she doesn't want to bring him into a potential media circus. So she's about to step down from Catco. But the team proves that one of the board members, the walking embodiment of male privilege, had her emails hacked on purpose. So they bust him and Kat stays in charge. So what did you think of this plot line?
I thought it was an interesting way to introduce her son, because obviously we had the huge, we've had loads of email scandals in the last year anyway. So it's kind of a little bit on point to like also explore that in the show. I thought it was quite interesting in that respect. But yeah, they had to be able to introduce her son somehow, and this was probably as good a way as any. And it was nice to see all of the guys working together to figure it out, and it was cool to see these little snippets of Kat's life through her emails as well. So, I don't know. It was okay. It was an interesting little side plot, but yeah. I thought it also showed a sweet side to her again, her motherly side, that she's willing to do anything for her children, that side of Kat, which I actually really like. So again, it really highlighted that in that she was willing to step down from this huge career and empire that she's built for herself and clawed her way up to make sure that her son is protected. Like that's an interesting aspect to Kat that I thought was really, really cool that came out of this. So, yeah, I enjoyed this as like a little side plot thing.
Yeah, it was very timely. And kind of just the reminder that Adam Foster will be showing up, and he's being played by Blake Jenner, who Melissa Benoist co-starred with on Glee and eventually married. So he'll be showing up soon and will be a potential love interest. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, me too, because, the chemistry should be quite interesting between them. I mean, you would hope so anyway, considering they're married.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end of the mid-season finale, Kat basically says, I know you're Supergirl. And so the whole kind of plot between Kara and Kat during the premiere is trying to be like, no, that's not me. I'm not Supergirl. Ha ha ha. And Kat's just like, please, I'm not stupid. I'm a journalist. Like, come on, I figured this out. And Kat eventually has this really interesting conversation with Kara where she's basically like, you know, what Supergirl does is so important that the more time you spend here, the less time Supergirl can be out there helping people. So you either need to prove to me that you are not Supergirl, or you need to quit so you can go be Supergirl full time, essentially. And Kara's like, oh crap, basically, because how do I prove I am not Supergirl? I am Supergirl. But what kind of Donya hinted at was that once Kara finds out Jean's identity, Jean takes Supergirl's form and goes in to see Kat, and Kara walks in, so they're in the same room together, and the scene is so hilarious. Like, oh, it's so nice to meet you, and I like your outfit. I like your glasses.
Now, this is what I'm looking forward to, is, like, just Jean being other people. I think that'll be, if they go with that with, like, other stuff, I think that's a really interesting thing that they could do with him. But this whole scene was, like, yeah, I thought there was room for it to be incredibly interesting if Kat was aware of who Kara really was. It would maybe even change the way that she was using the narrative of Supergirl a little bit as well. But she also had a really good point that, you know, Kara isn't utilizing all of her time as Supergirl, and potentially it's going to be that kind of balance that's more and more difficult to maintain if she's trying to live this double life. But I was mostly disappointed that Kat wasn't going to be in the know about it, because I thought that could have added another interesting dynamic to their relationship. But I get the feeling it'll probably come back out at some point.
I feel like it has to. I mean, I kind of wonder why Kara didn't feel safe with Kat knowing, because she seems to trust her quite a bit and knows how much Supergirl means to her. So I wonder if she was concerned she might be treated differently. She has the conversation where she says she needs the job because it helps her. But I'm sure if, you know, she just came out with the truth, she could have said that and said, this helps me be Supergirl, essentially. So I'm interested why she was so opposed to Kat knowing. Just, is there at some level that she does not trust her after all?
Yeah, and I think that'll be an interesting thing to explore, because now Kara's going to have to be even more careful. Because, yeah, okay, for now, she's bought some time, but eventually Kat's going to start getting suspicious again. She's clever. Kat is incredibly clever. She will probably figure out that something wasn't quite right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with that.
Indeed. But kind of after the whole conversation with Kat, Kara talks to Jean, and, you know, he says, you know, I would have liked having you at the DEO full time. And she says, you know, this job and my friends keep me human, basically. So I need it. And I don't know, it was this really lovely conversation and kind of hinting at the fatherly relationship that Jean is going to have with Kara and Alex now that his secret is out there. And I thought it was a great kind of starting point, because he is really kind and generous with her, essentially. And I really love that conversation.
Yeah, me too. And I like that Kara is very self-aware about what each aspect of her life means to her and what it means to her as Supergirl, and being able to separate her lives, even though it's going to continue being difficult, but she's very aware of what each aspect of her life means to her. And that was really, really cool. I love this show. Just is so on point. It's so good.
It's constantly surprising with what it's doing, and I love it. All right, so those were the mid-season finale and the mid-season premiere of Supergirl. It is off next week, and we'll be back on the 18th.
There we go. So,
and that is the episode with Toyman.
Yeah. So a very Wynn-centric episode. But let's go back and jump through the movie news super quick. There wasn't a lot over Christmas time. First thing that we got really was from Marvel, which is that Kurt Russell has confirmed that he's in talks to play Star-Lord's dad in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's about as much information as we got about it. He's in talks about it. We knew Star-Lord's dad was going to be coming up in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. They had mentioned that previously, but now we know who's up for the role. Quite like Kurt Russell, that he's got a great look for it. You can kind of see a resemblance almost between them. I mean, obviously he's a lot older, but there's, like, in the facial features, there's a lot that kind of reminds me a bit. So it works. So
Yeah, I'd buy him as Chris Pratt's father.
Yeah, right? Let's see, what else did we get? Oh, right, okay. Benedict Cumberbatch. We got our first look at him as Doctor Strange. Anyone who follows me on my personal Twitter will know wasn't incredibly enthused with the look. And I was talking with a couple of people back and forth on Twitter about it because I couldn't quite pinpoint exactly what was throwing me off about it, what didn't look right. Because it was just something about him that just didn't click for me.
That he's white?
That aside, I could potentially get over that eventually, maybe a little bit, but I think it was Madge who said something that kind of felt like, yes, that's it. And she said something along the lines that he looks like a kitten playing at being a tiger. And I was just like, yeah, that's kind of it. He's trying to be this really imposing, epic force of, like, magic and mysticism and everything. And it's just, I don't feel it. And the look just, it's not there for me. There's just something that just doesn't feel Stephen Strange. And I don't know, maybe it'll change when I see it in motion, but for now, I just, and also the overabundance of Photoshop, I have seen better Tumblr edits of Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange than the actual images that we got. And in some of the Tumblr edits, I was like, okay, I can kind of get on board with that because he kind of had that better look. But there's something about the styling here that's just slightly off for me that it doesn't work. I don't know about, what did you think?
I mean, I thought he looked like visually very similar to pictures of the costume I have seen, but really all that matters is how it looks in action. So stills can be very deceiving, both positively and negatively. So I'm kind of reserving judgment to see it in action.
Yeah, the beard isn't doing anything for me either. I think there's something about the beard that doesn't look quite right for me either. And his hair is kind of weird, straggly in the front and isn't sitting. I think I need to see it in motion because right now I'm still at that point where I'm like, it's still not working for me. And I need something else to kind of move it in a direction where it's going to change my mind. And at the moment, it's really not. And it's making me dread the movie more and more. But I'm hoping they might be able to turn it around on me and make me eat all of the words of my criticism when we finally get some more about the film. But one thing that we did get that I'm still seriously excited about is we got a new Red Band Deadpool trailer on Christmas Day. So that was a really cool Christmas present for all of us. A lot of the same footage that we've had in previous trailers, but still really cool. Oh, a couple of new little snippets, new bits of dialogue. I really liked it.
I did too, and I'm really excited for this movie.
Yeah. Yay.
Not a whole lot else to say about it, but no. It looks really good.
It does look incredibly good.
Just kind of briefly on the DC side as well, we got some new posters of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and as far as I'm concerned, we just got a Wonder Woman poster. and she, Gal Gadot, looks pretty great, I think. And I'm excited for her in this movie, at least.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see her. I really like that they used all of their different logos and it looks like graffiti spray paint on the posters. I thought that was kind of cool. I quite like the styling of it, but yeah, I'm mostly still on the fence with this movie. But again, still gonna go and see it, so...
Yep.
They've already got my money.
It's a thing that's happening and we can't stop it.
So. right, that's it for all of the TV news, movie news, and the super-sized Supergirl recap. Let's do a fun little year-in-review thing. So we'll just do this briefly back and forth. So I guess first things first, what was your favorite show of 2015?
The Flash.
Yeah.
The Flash never disappoints me.
Yeah. I I could see that. I could see that. I thought when I put this down, I was like, oh, it's going to be a toss-up between The Flash and Supergirl for you. But mine was...
I adored Supergirl, but I feel like The Flash, because we can take into account half of season one and half of season two, and it's kind of like even picked up even more in its second season, that it just gets the edge for me.
Mine was Jessica Jones. I think it just did such interesting stuff and different things with the platform that they had on Netflix. And obviously you can hear more thoughts about that in our Jessica Jones special edition, which was posted up before the year ended. Sorry for the delay on that. Real life around Christmas got a bit crazy. But it is up. It's all done. And you can go and hear more thoughts on that. But yeah, I think that was my favorite show of 2015.
It's definitely high on the list for me. Yeah. I love Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Most disappointing show?
Right. I'm going to cheat slightly for this one. It's not that the show was disappointing. It's that they cancelled it. So for me, most disappointing is Constantine because NBC. Just because NBC cancelled it. That is probably my most disappointing moment of TV this year, because that still really upsets me. Yeah, okay, he came back in Arrow, and that was really cool, but yeah. How about you?
Mine was, I will say, the second half of Arrow Season 3.
Okay.
Because Arrow Season 4, so far, I think has been very good, but the second half of Season 3 that aired January to May, I thought was very weak. So I will say that was the most disappointing.
Okay. Favorite superhero movie?
I only saw two, so favorite was Ant-Man.
Okay.
Because I had a lot of fun in Ant-Man.
Yeah, Ant-Man. Yeah. I think if I had to definitively pick a superhero movie, I would say Ant-Man as well, but I kind of want to class Star Wars as a superhero movie, and I want to say Star Wars, but no, none of the superhero movies that came out last year for me were good enough. I think they were all fairly subpar compared to stuff that we've had previously, so.
I was trying to think what else there was, but there was Fantastic Four.
Age of Ultron, Ant-Man.
Okay, there were only three. I was like, I saw two, but what else was there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we have favorite Ant-Man, least favorite. Well, for me, that only leaves Age of Ultron.
You know what? I think I'll have to say Age of Ultron as least favorite as well, because I was the most invested in that. With Fantastic Four, it wasn't a great movie, but I didn't have that emotional investment in it that made it disappoint me as much. Age of Ultron was a huge disappointment for me as well, which would make it my least favorite. Most shocking moment, and this can be from TV or movies.
Oh, I know, for sure. When we found out who the Reverse Flash really was.
Ah, yes.
So, okay. The fact that Harrison Wells was an innocent victim and Eobard Thawne killed him and took his body.
Okay.
Because nobody saw that coming.
So mine is when we find out who Hank is, so that he's actually Martian Manhunter. That's my big show. I'm still reeling from it. Like, that's still my kind of, oh my god, that's amazing moment. So.
Most emotional moment.
Okay, not moment, but the entire episode of Simmons on the planet in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, oh, that whole episode was just, like, a freaking masterclass. I absolutely love that episode still. It's still a huge standout for me from last year. So I think that's one of the most emotional moments for me, is, like, most of that. I think it was a really, really good kind of bottle episode. And sometimes those are very hit and miss. So for me, it was that.
For me, I'm going to go back to The Flash and go to the season one finale when Barry goes back in time and has to watch his mother murdered and holds her as she dies.
Oh, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty emotional.
That episode was I feel like it was nearly perfect. I have, like, a couple of small qualms, but they are so small, and that episode just destroyed me, especially that part.
Character who wins the most improved award?
Oliver Queen!
Oh, damn it, you took mine! Yeah, Oliver Queen wins most improved. Him and his and his domestic goddess cooking.
He has been so good in season four so far. I am so happy the direction they've taken that character.
He is a lot more Oliver Queen. Like, he's merging and kind of moving in the direction of, like, comic book Oliver Queen and cartoon series Oliver Queen more and more and more. And that's the direction that I'm really loving with it. So, yeah, most improved, Oliver Queen.
Unanimous. best villain.
Kilgrave.
I've got Damian Dark.
Yeah. what was the most exciting announcement for you of 2015?
I was trying to think of things that were announced, and I decided that the Legends of Tomorrow, because it was bringing Sarah back.
Yeah, okay. I'll be ridiculous then. When they announced that Constantine was coming to Arrow. I
assumed it would be.
Yeah.
I guess another good one could be that Agent Carter was renewed.
Yeah, that is another really good one.
Let's see. So, most anticipated movie of the coming year.
Civil War.
Civil War for me, too, yeah. I'm very excited for Deadpool, but Civil War is...
I think much the same with, like, why Age of Ultron was a disappointment. We have so much investment in these characters at this point that it's difficult not to anticipate it. And the trailer turned around my opinion and, like, so much of, like, from where I was when I was getting very worried about it. So, yeah. I think that's where I'm at with it. I'm just so excited to see it now. So excited. I've already booked a day off to see it at midnight. So, yeah. What about most anticipated TV show?
Shocking nobody. Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay. Mine's Lucifer. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing more of that. Because obviously got to see the premiere, at San Diego Comic-Con, but I'm really looking forward to the rest of it.
I keep forgetting that is a thing that is happening.
Yeah, this month. And I did look up when it's actually premiering, which is the 25th of January. Okay. So watch out for it, because it was surprisingly hilarious. It was a lot funnier, and it's that dark sort of humor than I was expecting it to be, and it was really great. So watch out for that coming up on the 25th.
Okay, and... what headline would we love or hate to see in 2016?
Love, we're getting a Black Widow movie. Yeah. Hate, they've delayed Captain Marvel again.
Oh, this is hard. Love, another season of Legends of Tomorrow, because we have no idea what they're doing with that. And hate that John Barrowman is a series regular on Arrow.
Okay.
Listen. Or Brett Dalton is a series regular in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I don't know how that would work.
Unless... I don't either, but I don't want word around anymore. So.
Yeah. Okay, so that was our year in review. If you guys want to answer any of those questions, by the way, feel free in a comment or anywhere else on Twitter, whatever. You just go wild, guys. Have some fun with it. But obviously people who have already contacted us, we've got some feedback from you guys. So, let's get started with Jewel, who said, wait, but I totally knew Henshaw was going to be Martian Manhunter. That was my only guess all season.
So you... Danya was out of the know.
I was so out of the know on that. I did not see it coming at all.
I saw the theories floating around, but I was like, but that's not who he is in the comics. That's silly.
And then it happened, and you're like, okay, maybe not so silly after all.
Like, okay, I was wrong, and I'm totally okay with being wrong, because this is great.
Yeah.
So So Lizzie tweeted us and said, do you think Arrow could be doing an Oracle storyline and Felicity will be wheelchair bound from now on? Also, I think Thea is in the grave because Merlin keeps threatening to come after Oliver if she dies. Part one, I wrote an article about this. Yes, I do think they are going there. I don't foresee her being wheelchair bound permanently. I imagine they'll find a way for her to walk eventually, because even Barbara Gordon gets to walk eventually again as well. But there are a lot of hints that they're going this way with her storyline. Because, as we have said, it is obviously not Felicity who is in the grave. She's not going to die from the shooting.
Yeah, it's not. It's definitely not her in the grave. And I think she's already taken on a sort of Oracle-ish role within the show already, that I think it's just, it's like a progression of that. But yeah, I think it's definitely what they're going with.
Yes. As for Thea in the grave, I will be shocked, personally, because how many more queens can really die at this point? I'm still sticking with it being Quentin Lance, personally.
Yeah, Caitlin's swaying me to Quentin Lance, but, you know, they've introduced more queens, technically, or people that Oliver is directly connected to, i.e., his baby mama, so, and obviously his son. So they are introducing, technically, queens adjacent, so that they can kill them off, I guess. Cassie said, obviously this is about Supergirl, wow, what a finale. They upped the budget on the fight scenes, and yay, Kat knows now. Lol, Blake Jenner's character is her son.
But then Kat doesn't know anymore.
Well, for now.
Aw, sad panda. Shelby says, thanks for mentioning the CGI in the X-Men trailer. I'm sure they're just trailer effects, but that Quicksilver shot was weak.
It does not get any better the more you try watching it, either. And the thing, right, here's the really stupid thing now, is I now feel terrible for all of the really horrible things that I've been saying about Apocalypse, because following The Force Awakens, I was already kind of like a fan-ish of Oscar Isaac in other roles and other stuff that he'd done previously, like Inside Llewyn Davis is like a phenomenal film he's done, and I did see Ex Machina over the holidays as well, and he was phenomenal in that. Now I feel really bad, because I fell in love with his character in Star Wars, and I've been so mean about Apocalypse. Now I'm like, oh no, I'm betraying Oscar Isaac in my head, because apparently this is my life now.
I mean, I'm sure the role's very similar to Poe Dameron.
Yes, yes, clearly. Exactly the same. Right, final comment was from Sarah, who said, I was really excited when Kara revealed herself to Kat, but then this app totally rewound that. Interested in hearing your thoughts. We did chat about it, obviously, during our episode recap, so hopefully that covered everything that you wanted to hear about.
But you can always tweet us for more.
Yes. Yeah. And that's it, guys. If you want to get hold of us to give us any feedback or talk about anything we've discussed on the show, you can do so by tweeting us at Hero Hype Podcast, or you could send us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. But we're going to leave you with our question of the week for this week. And Caitlin, would you like to get it?
So in honor of the new year, we are asking, what New Year's resolution should your favorite character make?
Hawkeye... New Year's resolution would be to stop jumping or falling off tall buildings and being a disaster. Or remember to feed the dog, I guess.
The dog that looks just like my dog.
The dog that looks just like Caitlin's dog. Caitlin has a pizza dog. It's great.
It's my pup. Trying to think of New Year's resolutions. Maybe for my least favorite character, Malcolm is gonna resolve to just continue being shady as hell. I think that'll be easy for him.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have much difficulty with that. But yeah, let us know what New Year's resolutions, guys. Again, just gave you all of the contact information, so feel free to get hold of us on any of that. But that's it for this week. So, as always, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you on the next episode, guys. Bye.
Bye.